Hey listeners, this is Travis Book, bassist and singer in the bluegrass band The Infamous String Dusters. I started the Travis Book Happy Hour to try to get to the root of what makes my contemporaries tick, what inspires and motivates them, and why they make music. It's an hour where we get to play together, talk about life, and do it all in front of a live studio audience. If you haven't listened yet, maybe check out some of my highlights, including Sierra Hull, Beppe Gambetta, Tim O'Brien, and Lindsay Liu. You can find every episode of the Travis Book Happy Hour on the Bluegrass Situation Podcast Network or wherever you get podcasts.
Hi, and welcome to Basic Folk, where we have honest conversations with folk musicians on the Bluegrass Situation Podcast Network. I'm the host, Cindy Howes, and since we've done 200 episodes, I feel like we can do whatever we want, and we're doing that today. We have a really fun interview with Anna Tivel and Jeffrey Martin. Before we get into it, let's talk about our newsletter. Are you on it? It's a fun time. We send out a monthly email that keeps you up to date on what is all happening. If you'd like to sign up, you can go to our website, basicfolk.com. Would be great. Thumbs up. Or you can also follow us on social media. We're at basicfolkpod. Okay, fun times with our favorite non-duo, Anna Tivel and Jeffrey Martin. The pair met in the early 2010s in Portland, Oregon, bonded over songwriting, and have been together ever since. They got together at a time when they were both learning how to tour, and they were able to figure it out as a pair. And yes, they have toured together and do tour together and have sang on each other's records, but there has never been an interest in an official collaboration. In this special interview, they discuss their thoughts and feelings on their partner's musical style, from how each learn to the way they each write songs. They discuss the space they give each other to be alone in creativity and how that space is key to their success as partners. Anna released her latest album, The Acclaimed Outsiders, in 2022, and Jeffrey is currently working on a new record. In fact, Jeffrey is recording his upcoming release in a small shack he built on their property in Portland. He completed the structure just in time for the pandemic to start, which was actually perfect timing since it meant he had his own space to work outside of his house, and they both had a place to perform their weekly live streams. Jeffrey is also quite handy and has agreed to build a house for me, and don't think I won't hold him to it. We have it on tape, Jeffrey. Please enjoy this fun interview with two of my favorite people and musicians, Anna Tivel and Jeffrey Martin. What we're going to do is take a listen to an Anna song and then a Jeffrey song, and then we'll get to our conversation. So we're going to check out the title track from Anna's album, Outsiders. And then we'll hear Jeffrey's latest song that he released last year called I Know What I Know. And then we'll hear our conversation with Anna Tivel and Jeffrey Martin on Basic Folk.
Watching the earth rise and up. Out of the darkness, cerulean blue. Water and thunder and dust. Floating like magic. Alive in the air, his body a weightless machine. Farther away than a plane or a bird or a dreamer had ever been. Outsiders, look up.
Tell me your story. Don't reach for my hand. I already know you won't understand. I've been building a world here with all that I need. The smaller it is, the easier it is to believe.
Anna and Jeffrey, thank you for talking to me on the podcast. Jeffrey, especially, is thanks to you because you are in recording mode right now. So This might be a weird interview for you, but I appreciate it nonetheless.
No, it's good actually, because I've been too much in my head doing this, but it's nice to step out for a second.
Yeah, great. Before we begin, I want to give a shout out to the Songwriting Diaries podcast, where you both did an episode back in 2021. So like you did it together, much like our format today. But there's lots of cool information there. And if people haven't listened, I would recommend it. It's called the Songwriting Diaries podcast.
Yeah.
Okay. So you two met in Portland.
We did.
Maybe like 11 or 12 years ago. Jeffrey was playing at Mississippi Pizza. A mutual friend brought Anna. There was this like after show gathering where songs were swapped.
Just songs.
No saliva.
How do you know all this, Cindy?
Because I am your archivist.
Amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. What do you recall, maybe not like that particular night, but if that you do have a recollection of that particular night, what do you recall of the other's music on first impression?
I think we both remember that night because we have a good friend of ours was there at this show that I was playing. I think, did Clinton bring you, Anna? Is that why you went there?
Yeah, I think a buddy of both of ours was, I was playing fiddle with his band and I had just started writing songs. He was like, oh, you should come down the street. This guy from Eugene is playing. I really love his songwriting. I just remember, I remember you weren't wearing shoes and you turned on the disco ball.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a lot of kids eating pizza and it was just totally magical. I remember feeling... It's like that rare thing when you find art that makes you feel, it just feels like recognition or something. Like, oh, you can do that with words? Oh, I totally feel that in my deepest gut.
And we went back after that show, we went to Clinton's house, our buddy, and played music in his garage space. And then that was like maybe the first time we ever really just swapped songs and... yeah, that's what I remember. Was that before you were working on that first album, the Lullaby album?
I don't know. I can't remember. Yeah, I think we were just both kind of figuring out what it all was to us. And
were you aware of each other?
No, not. I think I had seen Anna play with a buddy at a folk festival like a year or so before, but we didn't meet, I don't think. But I didn't know she was writing songs. And then I remember I was working in Eugene building houses, and I just remember driving around listening to these really rough mixes that Anna had sent. I don't even know what you recorded those on, because it was like before smartphone days. It must have been on some weird thing you had. But I just remember listening in the truck to these like beautiful, weird, rough mixes of your very first album. And yeah, and just being like, wow, like nobody writes this way.
Jeffrey grew up playing the cello, and Anna played the fiddle as a kid, which is pretty cool that you both had your roots beginning on stringed instruments. I don't know if you've ever thought of this before, but how do you observe your origin in strings on each other's playing and writing now, and how do you observe it in your own playing?
Well, Jeffrey just plays What Can You Do With a Drunken Sailor over and over again.
I was just going to say, I mean, I did grow up playing the cello, but Anna much more so grew up like playing fiddle and violin, like for real. Like she was, and she is like so talented, and I haven't touched a cello in like 20 years, but I've thought about that a lot, actually. I've talked about that with my folks, like how playing the cello growing up might have, I don't know, like what flavor it brought to songs later on and guitar playing later on. And I think there's like a melodic sensibility to things that comes from the kind of like flowy melodies on those instruments. Obviously you can like pluck and get all staccato and stuff, but to me, like my favorite cello moments were the slow like covers of Beatles songs that were like really just melodic, and I could feel it in my whole body, and I feel like I'm chasing that still with guitar and stuff. Yeah. But Anna, you were legit. You were like fiddle camp, and
I don't know if that's legit. I do think we both. Sorry if that's loud. I'm dog sitting, and there's an electronic kibble machine that just spit out so many kibbles, and the dog got
Listen,
so excited.
You gotta eat.
Oh, there's a kibble situation. I do think that we both, for maybe strings reason, just like taking in music that way on instruments that are kind of like melody based, or that feel very vocal.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah,
come at it that way, or especially Jeffrey. Like I could just speak a poem over a random assortment of chords that I know and feel like that song's done, but I really like Jeffrey will walk around for days and months and years with like wordless melodies happening in his mind, and I think you have about 1 billion voice memos of melodic ideas, which is something that I really respect and love about his music, and I don't think I come at it melody first very often, but I really like that.
So before Anna and I were talking, and I was telling her that I worried as an interviewer, I'm writing the same question over and over again. So if you think that this is like too similar to the previous question, we can just skip it. But in terms of the learning methods of how you really like dug into performing, so Jeffrey, you haven't touched a cello in 20 years, but guitar is like a pretty big deal instrument for you. And it was kind of like the first big deal instrument. And you started playing guitar in the church. Anna started learning music by the Suzuki method. So how can you see traces of how the other learned in their performing and writing?
I mean, Anna, you still have... Well, I don't know a lot about the Suzuki method. I feel like what I understand about it is like it's really an intuitive way to learn. Like you're listening and playing, and instead of like some like regimented, very strict thing. Is that true? You know?
It's a lot of ear. I mean, I think it's taught. Maybe depending on how like stickler your teacher is, but yeah. A lot of it's like ear and memorization and stuff, which is cool. So it ends up being kind of like a exercise in listening a lot.
Like you still you have such an ear for what a thing should sound like or what it could sound like when we're working on like harmonies and stuff sometimes, or like sometimes you have melody suggestions that are like things that you hear so clearly in your mind, I think that I don't have access to. And I certainly never learned cello that way. Cello was always very like I loved it when I was playing, but it was also, it didn't feel anything like music does to me now. And I wish that I'd had a more free like experience with the cello, because I wonder what would have happened. But I don't know. I mean, church-wise, There's a ton of shit that influenced and still influences the way I play guitar and write songs and stuff. But also I try and like anything. I just noticed this the other day. I was working on a new song and it reminded me of a church song, like a church.
Uh-oh.
And I canned it I just stopped. So there's no part of me that's like, oh, I don't want anything to sound like any of the church music I ever played growing up, but it definitely helped formulate like how things
move. But I think there's like this, like not in a churchy or unchurchy way at all. I always wonder if like you always seem so connected to the, like you're really good at making melodies hold gravity and like taking your time in this way that I often feel with hymns. There's like the, you know, there's like the hymns that are like
him,
geez, it, I don't know how to say it.
Are you saying him? Like him your pants?
How do you say it? Him?
Him? Like a hymnal?
I've only read the heathen hymnal.
Somebody didn't go to church.
But you know, like, there's cheesier church music, and then there's the hymns that it doesn't matter where you're coming at it from, it's just so flippin' beautiful.
And yeah.
Like the Christmas songs, or like Oh Holy Night and things, Ave Maria, that just people just feel it. And I always wonder, I don't know, you have a quality of that in your music, often in your melodies, and like the way you take your time with choruses and take your time kind of like rounding out a thought. I always wonder, I don't know, and also in like the presentation of, yeah, sometimes I listen to your dad talk, who was a pastor, and like, oh man, I feel like you grew up watching this person like share their heart in a really weighty way with people, in a really like humble way that feels very real. And I don't know, I've always felt like you do that really well, both in like teaching situations and in music.
I never know what to do with old,
the great way,
like those old, there's, what's that song, I was just working on an old hymnal song, like Be Thou My Vision. Do you remember that song? That's a like such an amazing melody.
That's a good one.
And it's like I always feel like drawn to record those songs or play those songs at shows and stuff. Like I really want to, like, but then I don't want it to bring any like potential religious baggage to a show or to an album or anything, but I wish that you could cover those songs in a, I don't know, a pure, like a secular way. Yeah, and maybe I can, but I just, those are amazing melodies.
You know what some people do in shows that drives me crazy? They'll be playing one of their songs, and then all of a sudden they'll, like, Glenn Hansard is famous for this. He'll be playing his song, and then all of a sudden he'll start playing like Ring of Fire. It's like, look how similar my song is to Ring of Fire, and it's like such a parlor trick. But anyways, you could do that with him.
Yeah, look how similar my song is to God's.
Such
song.
A weird effect.
Yeah,
work your way look at from this. Like,
God is my co-writer.
Yeah. Oh man,
Your voices have evolved over the years. How did singing together and for each other impact your voices? And what do you think of your evolution of singing?
Ooh, Anna, you go first.
A lot. For me, a lot, I think. Jeffrey's voice is like very... The doctor once told him he has a large throat, and I love... And that just is like... I think,
thanks for putting my... large throat information out into the world.
That's a HIPAA violation.
Yeah, but I mean, there's like this like huge warm roundness to his voice that is just like everything that I love about singing, when somebody can like just envelop you with very like raw great vocals. And I've always felt really shy or kind of like bottled up with my voice, and I definitely think I always listen to Jeffrey sing and remember that you can just let it out and be more free and like be more exploratory melodically. Yeah, and then I think I just love to sing with him. I love it. I feel like harmonies, there's like some people that your harmony ideas, or just you don't have any ideas, and then other people that it feels so natural to sing with. And I've always really loved to sing with Jeffrey.
It's, I love that there's a record that exists, both for Anne and I, of early recordings and first albums and stuff, where we were both completely like untrained singers, never took any lessons, and you can tell, like, especially in those early ones, because like there are songs that I still play that I wrote 15 years ago, but I sing them so differently now than I did back then, because I just didn't know what a voice could do. Like, I didn't know what you were allowed to do, really. And so my version of singing, I feel like, when I was first writing songs, was probably based on what it felt like to sing in church, with a group of people where you're not listening to the nuances of your own voice. You're just kind of like opening your mouth and squawking. And like, I felt happy. I remember feeling like when I made this, my very first recordings, I remember being so excited that I could sing in a key. Like I could sing a note that I wanted to sing. But now looking back, it's like, I listen to those recordings and I hear how closed up my voice was and how afraid I was just to like relax into it and let it be. And I don't know, it's been a, I think maybe in that way, it's been a journey for both of us, like realizing like you can just kind of like sing with a lot less effort. And then all of a sudden it becomes way more interesting and way more powerful sometimes. And sometimes over singing starts to get pretty tiresome. And that was, that's what I hear in my early voice.
Hmm. Yeah, me too. Just listening to, I think we both have really tenuous relationships with our earliest recordings. Of just, you can just hear so much of your, where you were emotionally also. It just, yeah. What was, what you were fearful of and what you felt insecure about and what your ability to like open yourself up. Just comes out so much in your voice.
You two have never wanted to be a duo or like an official band. I'm wondering if there's like any pressure to team up, to be a duo, to record together, but just in general, can you expand on why that is?
There, I don't feel any real pressure. I mean, there's always people at shows, and sometimes they like suggest that idea as if it's novel. Like, hey, have you ever thought about, you know, you guys making an album together and whatever?
Do I have $1 million idea yeah. for you?
And I get it. I mean, I think that'd be really fun to do someday. I think what's we're both just really honestly chasing what we feel compelled to write. And if we felt compelled to write together on a project, I think we would do that. But just for as long as we've been together and known each other, like, it's been a really beautiful thing to like, for me to see Anna have to write what she writes, and for her to see me have to write what I have to write. And there's this really weird line in my mind, at least between, it's a spectrum, but there's definitely a line I cross where I'm chasing a thing that could be really entertaining. And I don't even mean in like a vapid way, but just like, this could be, people would really be really into this. Or am I chasing the thing?
Like, can you talk a little bit more about that? Like when you say not in a vapid way, but people would be into it.
Well, there's just, there's a whole side of music that's entertainment. You know, it's like, it's things that are enjoyable to listen to sometimes, or things that make you shake your ass or whatever it is. And like, And that stuff is really important also, but I just, for whatever reason, I've always been drawn to exploring what I feel like I need to say for myself. And so that hasn't, not yet at least, I haven't felt the itch to like, hey, let's team up on a project and try and make something together, if that makes any sense. It just feels... I love how distinct, you know, like Anna and I live together and we share a space and we spend a lot of time together, but still we can go our separate ways in writing and produce really different things. And I love that that aspect. I don't know if that makes any sense. Anna, what do you think? You want to be a duo?
Yeah. I've just been waiting for you to ask. I totally agree. And I think we both have felt really like we don't know what we're doing, and we never have. We just both individually have always seemed really driven by the writing part, and which is nice to be making a life with somebody who seems to have the same like gut artistic drives, and so you can kind of understand each other. Like right now we have, Jeffrey's in this little shack that he built, and then like 5 feet away from it is this little old trailer that we drug into the yard, and that I write in there and he writes in the shack, and it just feels like, I don't know, we we feed the part of it that feels really important to our hearts, I guess. And I don't think either of us has ever. I think we could get into writing together someday, but we just like don't seem to either of us have the drive to do that. We really like the process of sitting alone and exploring that landscape.
I think it's weird. I mean, I get why people ask about it, and I get the like why that's an exciting idea, I guess. But if Anna and I were writing books, each of us, or if Anna was like a poet purely and whatever, no one would ever say like, when are you going to write a book together? Or, you know, and I know that music is different, but in our minds, I think it very much feels like writing first and then finding out how to put that writing to music. And so it feels really solitary in a good way.
I think it was Anna who was the one that said, there's a lot of joy in being a hermit and coming back with songs to share. Can you talk about what it's like being alone, especially in your relationship, like when you're talking about you're not writing together, you're writing in separate places, but like being alone, especially in your relationship where your partner is giving you the space?
I mean, it's beautiful. It's the best thing, and it's the strangest thing sometimes. You know, sometimes it's the best gift. We swap being home a lot because we're both touring a lot, and so, you know, Anna will go out for 3 weeks and I'll be home, and then she'll come home and I'll go out on tour sometimes like that, and I think we both have a similar experience every time that happens, where the first few days alone at home we just self-destruct entirely, and we stay up too late and eat shittily and the house becomes destroyed, and then we put the pieces back together, and then it becomes this like really kind of like, I don't know, sometimes it feels like monastic or something. I don't know if that's the right word, but it's like what a gift to be able to be with somebody, but also to have these chunks of time that are so solitary, and you can let your mind go way past where you wanted it to go, and then it gets into a place you never thought it would go, and your writing goes there too, and then your person gets back home and you can share all the weird shit you found in your brain, and like, I don't know, that's how it feels on good times, I think, or in good times.
The pandemic was so interesting because we've been together, you know, a long time, and but we've never been together that much, you know. We have never just like spent 2 years in the same place at the same time, but we definitely have spent a lot of time in small spaces together. So it wasn't hard. It just was really different. The movement of the day and everything was really different. And I think when touring started again, it really made me realize what a gift it is to like go in your own mind and just get like bombarded by the world and then bring home separate things to each other. You're like bringing home bits of the world that you took in and what moved you and what was funny and what was weird. And it was an experience that just one of you had, and you're sort of like having this constant push and pull of, I don't know, yeah, just bringing things to each other. And I think the pandemic made me think, oh, that's such a it's such a beautiful thing that we get to have, that maybe isn't everybody's working life experience to like be away from each other so much and then come home and be like, whoa, this person I met was amazing, or like this thing was so strange and made me feel so much.
I think we're both pretty like solitary people to a fault, like both of us, and that's okay. I think we've like made our peace with it, but I sometimes I don't know, occasionally we like get to see how other people's relationships work, and I think it freaks us both out a little bit, like like, you mean every time you go to the grocery store you're there together, and like stuff like that is really strange to me, because I think just because of the schedule of our lives we spend so much time.
You ever hang out with lesbians? They're always together.
Always?
Grocery store every They're day, all
always.
The time.
Every, you know, they do everything together. From the perspective of discovery, Your solitude leads to innate and often covert findings. It's almost like when you do take the solitude, you go into like a research mode for your songwriting, although it's, you have to be like very, you can't be too aggressive with it or the songs won't come. But you've talked about how the job of songwriting looks different from other jobs where it may look like you're not actually like accomplishing anything. And this is a world where so much is expected in terms of creation and in terms of accomplishments and productivity. But that's just like not what being a songwriter looks like. So can you talk about the struggle to prioritize your solitude over content creation?
Oh, man. That's Cindy, such a with good the question. Heavy questions.
We talk about this all the time, and I think that it took a long time, but lately we both feel really peaceful about the way that doing this for a job or just as a way to move through the world is there's a lot of things that don't make sense in the real world of just the way you spend your time and the amount of time you dedicate to kind of creating space so you can be experiencing and thinking and processing and it might seem like your day is a weird non-thing, but letting that be part of it. I don't know how you feel about this, Jeffrey, but it took me a long time to settle down and not feel guilty about like having a really long walk where I'm like writing a poem in my head be an okay way to spend the day. And that's like part of writing and part of being creative.
It's a strange, that's a forever battle, I think, to feel okay or to feel like you're contributing in a society that has pretty clearly defined, even if they're pretty fucked up in my mind, but pretty clearly defined definitions of like, here's how you contribute and here's how you don't contribute to our society and whatever. And like I spend a lot of time working in much more conventional things before I was all in with music, and there's many times a day where I have to remind myself not to feel bad about myself because my time doesn't resemble other people's time. But the work is the same, I've found. The time required to produce the good work is the same as anything. It's just broken up so differently. You know, you'll spend a month on like a grueling tour in a different city every night. And I think from a distance, people can romanticize that beyond what it is. And then you come home and you try to readjust to being home for a chunk of time, and that takes mental energy too. And like, it's a strange thing. I think sometimes both of us wish, like, oh, I wish I could just wake up at 8 o'clock today and start making donuts for somebody and be done at 5. And that sounds like the structure of that is really appealing to me sometimes. But there is like an expansiveness required to write. You have to like put your mind or protect your mind and protect the things that you care about in your mind, and then give it space to let that stuff clarify enough to like put it into words or to chase down ideas that mean something to you. But we often joke about like what our neighbors might think of us, you know, like we're gone for chunks of time and then all of a sudden we're home and we're like wearing sweatpants and walking dogs at 1 p.m. every day. And like, you know, I used to feel this like, oh, I should probably go tell them like why we're this way, you know, but I don't they care anymore about it.
They can hear us singing the same line over and over again at two in the morning. Yeah. Just,
yeah,
I do think we both think a lot about ways to protect the like heart of what we love about getting to make music, which is like the writing and the expression, and then trying to share that with people in real ways and kind of protecting that from the business content machine thing, and just like really Like, it's hard to try to grow something that maybe can be sustainable and you can make a life of it and truly try to ignore all the factors of it that take away from the just pure kind of love of trying to observe the world and express it in front of people. And yeah, I think we have a lot of talks about just like letting all the other noise not matter. And just even if we're broke when we're 90 and but we just love writing, then that will be a life well lived, you know?
You guys can come live with me and my doctor wife.
Oh, great. Yes. It's good to have that officially recorded.
Yeah. It's just going to be
a concrete
part of our plan.
I mean, there's a big trade-off. There's a big trade-off to this kind of life, I think. It's like, it is, I feel like you have to be okay with instability in a lot of ways. We are broke and we are putting every dollar we make, we put back into music so we can go back on tour, or we can make an album again, or whatever it is. And like, there's an absurd aspect to it that's like, man, what are we doing right now? But at the same time, I often think like, if we had a kid, or if I was still like teaching and a student came to me asking for advice or something about what they should do, I often feel really lucky that I've managed to like find my way into something that allows me to have the time to like explore my mind and explore life. And it doesn't have to be music. I just mean like the time, like, and maybe you feel that way too, Cindy, like in a lot of ways, you know, you've kind of built this thing for yourself and you're the one who determines what you do with a lot of your time. And that's a gift that comes with a trade-off, because a lot of the questions like, what to do with your time and how much money you're going to make and health insurance and all that stuff, those aren't answered for you, but in exchange you do get the freedom to explore. And
Anna's new album, NPR Music's Ann Powers number one album of 2022, titled Outsiders, focuses on otherness and what are the forces that keep us from connecting, amongst other things. So being an outcast or being an outsider, what is your perspective on being an outsider? How has it changed recently, maybe? And also, especially when thinking about how unconventional your workflow is and beyond that.
I was just, while Jeffrey was talking, I was thinking about how much sometimes I have this really strong feeling of how I thought of the world and myself in it and people moving around me before I got the chance to tour. And you're just like kind of within the bubble of your life and whatever it is and where you're working, and then how it feels to have for like more than a decade now just like gone from town to town and sort of like stayed in people's living rooms and heard all these stories from different places in the world, and I don't know, I think that's like my favorite part of this job, is this constant reminder that, or you sometimes feel like you're so outside of the way society is moving around, and then also you're just like constantly reminded that everyone is living these narratives and having their own bucket of struggle and love, and there's just no, I don't know, I just constantly having this experience.
Are you saying that everyone is an outsider?
Yeah,
everyone feels like an outsider,
or that's what feels so like exploring. I just think I'm constantly
insider.
you're in the know.
I agree, Anna. I think both of our like favorite songs are probably songs that in some way like help illuminate or remind people when they listen to them that their story that can feel really mundane in the day to day is actually profound. And So I don't feel like an outsider, or like you said, Cindy, I guess everyone is an outsider, and we all just forget that for chunks of time, or we forget to celebrate it at least. Yeah.
So the shack, Jeffrey is sitting in the shack right now. We talked about it a little bit. Jeffrey, you built a structure on your property that you perform in. You did a lot of live streams during the quarantine. You write in the shack, you record in the shack, and you finished it right when the pandemic started. So what is the story of how the building came to be, and how has it changed your work?
Well, Anna and I, we live in a garage that we turned into like a little lofted studio apartment years ago, and it's fantastic, but it's there's no separation, there's no space in it, and we just really wanted like a separate space that was dedicated to writing and making music and whatever, and so that's why I built it. But it just makes me feel a little bit like I'm going to work in a really good way. And I think Anna feels this way too about the trailer she has now. It's like, I'm leaving the space where I cook eggs and I'm going to go into the space where I write songs. And that, and they're only like 12 feet apart really, but that distance is makes all the difference. And
a good commute though.
Yeah. 12 feet. Yeah, it's nice.
Yeah. I love when... Oh, go ahead, Cindy.
Oh, no, you go ahead. I want to hear from Jeffrey at some point the actual, like, nuts and bolts, if you can put it in layman's terms, of how you built a shack.
Oh, like the structure? Yeah, how did you build the shack? I mean, it's just a tool shed with no tools in it, you know? So it's pretty cheaply built. I don't know, and it's...
Is it like a prefab thing?
No, I mean, I just built it, but I don't know. I don't know how to explain. I don't know. It's like, it's just a framed structure like any other, like a house or anything, but it's just one room, like 8x6 or something, with a door mm-hmm. and a window, and that's all. I don't know.
How long did it take to build it?
Like a week.
Can you come to my house and build one?
Yeah, we can do that.
All right, great.
Yeah. I think the problem with, like, Jeffrey has so many building skills, and like I think this morning he spent the morning over at the neighbor's house fixing their furnace. But the word gets out. It's like if you are really good at fixing cars, like the word gets out, or you're the person in the neighborhood that has the truck or something.
Right. Or like the doctor.
Yeah.
Everybody's exactly. Like
always
yeah.
texting and calling Elizabeth.
Yeah. Hey, how are you doing? And also, does this mole look weird?
Yeah. Looks great. But then, like, when you're, I don't know if Anna, you're like, you need to fix this faucet. And then, like, months will go by. And I'm like, Elizabeth, I have this, like, weird bruise. She's like, looks fine. Looks fine. To me. Jeffrey, you talked about how your songwriting changed because of quarantine and the pandemic, and you can now stay in that weird reclusive space for weeks on end. Yeah. Impressive, even if you have to do real person things during the day. Can you talk about the process of being comfortable in that space, and how can you maintain it when you're actually like doing those like real people things?
Yeah, that was the most unexpected thing about this whole chunk of time, was, you know, like learning that I needed to learn to be proud of that, I guess is the way to say that. But I just feel like it's something that would pop up before that in my, when I'd get into the flow of writing or something, and I'd go down some weird corners and then feel like I needed to kind of rein myself back in, because I don't know why. And then just maybe because of everything felt so weird during the pandemic that I felt this freedom to just lean into it, and it has really changed the way I write and the way I play music now too. It just feels a lot more free to me. And
Anna, do you notice a difference?
Yeah, totally. It's been really cool to watch. Sometimes I feel like, I don't know, tell me if this sounds wrong to you, Jeffrey, that Like you've worked a lot of jobs and you have a lot of real world skills and know-how, and like you taught kids and you've built houses and these things that like put you in worlds that are very like moving in a certain way. And I sometimes think that, I don't know, you've like taken a long road to being comfortable with moving in this way because you know what it feels like to be very effective at like showing up to work and laying the foundation. Maybe it's been hard to like let yourself fully go out there, but it's been really beautiful to, I just feel like you've been like digging in deeper and deeper in your writings, getting more and more free just like it's really, I've been really inspired watching you the past couple of years dig in.
It might be just an age thing too, really. I mean,
yeah,
like, you are 100 years old.
Yeah. Well, I don't know, just when I was younger, I felt like there were all these maybe even subconscious things, like I needed to be this way or I needed to move through the world in this way, and I don't really feel that as much now, and I don't know.
Of your writing process, Jeffrey has a hard time writing about the present and needs time to process things. You called yourself, on the songwriting diaries, you called yourself like a crockpot, which is great. And you also mentioned that you think the present moment is more expressed in Anna songs, which I can agree to that. How do you see those aspects of your writing expressed in yourself outside of your music?
That's a great question, but it's funny to me to like Anna, there's so many ways that expresses itself outside of music. Like, I feel like I need, even as life is happening in the moment, in every aspect, it would be great if I could have a year or two to process it. I feel like way more than me, Anna wakes up and does the thing, you know? It's like there's many days where it takes me a good, I don't know, hour and a half to wake up, and Anna, 7 minutes into being awake, is like, would you like to walk to the next town over with the dogs or something? And I haven't even, yeah. And yeah, it's just a slowness of mind, I think.
I think it's really interesting, though, because you asked that question, but I also have always felt really slow at figuring out how I feel about anything. And even like in situations like this, you ask such good questions, and I always have this like pit of my stomach feeling like I'm not expressing what I'd like. In like real time, I'm not ever satisfied with my expression of what I am feeling, and I often feel like in situations like this, Jeffrey is very like graceful and able to put his words together in real time in a way that I'm like, oh yeah, that makes total sense, and then I say like a blob of shit and then that I have to like back myself out of eventually, but I do, yeah. And then it's like he expresses what he's already expressed so beautifully in like a year, he'll express in a song really beautifully. And I don't know, maybe my working through my backward blob is like happens in songwriting. That's like where I'm working it out in real time, but
yeah,
otherwise I'm a mess.
You're a lot more immediate you're a lot more in the world of words than I am, just on a day-to-day basis. Like you read way more than I read, and you write way more than I write, and I feel like it gives you this like this vocabulary that you have at the ready when stuff in life happens that you observe, or stuff
says the guy who brought out the stick.
But I don't quite know what that word means
in the interview.
But
I'm reading
for like really going for it. Reach for the stars. It
makes me feel really gymnastic, you know.
Yeah.
I think I'm always taking in a lot of like flowery, poetic kind of formatted novels and poems, and I often feel like Jeffrey's taking in a lot of amazing information. Like He'll come in from the shack and I'll be like, listen to this poem that vaguely is about love. And he'll be like, did you know that they're making mice age backwards?
That's true. That's like a daily occurrence.
It's good. I think it's good to be around him. It's like real earth things are happening in his mind.
Do you guys, all right, so I've talked recently about negative bias with Mark Aureli on the podcast. It's basically, do you know what it is, negative bias? It's like your brain trying to keep you safe. Safe as possible. Your brain is trying to like, so it takes all of the feedback that you get from the world and it only like pays attention to the negative feedback.
Yeah.
And then it like plays in a loop in your head, and it's all so that the saber-toothed tiger doesn't eat you.
Gotcha.
Like you need to pay the most attention to the worst things because
you're trying to like survive, but like it's an old like caveman days thing that our brain hasn't evolved out of quite yet. But can you imagine what humanity will be like once the negative bias is like been eviscerated?
No.
Unstoppable.
Or terrifying.
Well, I love your optimism, man.
Like, we already take enough pictures of ourselves. If we had no like negative narrative happening, that might get overwhelming.
I hesitate to ask this question after bringing up negative bias, but Anna, we were talking about how you read a lot of books, you listen to a lot of music, and you say you can feel the lens narrow if you aren't doing that, and the more words that you take in, the wider your lens get. Some artists actually like do the opposite, where they will not listen to or read anything, especially when they're in sort of like a writing mode, to avoid being over influenced. How do you manage this practice and still find your own voice in it?
I think I just try not to think about it that way, or I just try not to like put weight on that, because listening, like reading and listening to other people express the world, just I think that just feels really inspiring to me. Like a lot of days I've been like working on the same verse for 2 days straight and it's going nowhere, and then I just like watch a bunch of music videos of people just brilliantly expressing things, and all of a sudden I want to write. And I don't think I really care, as long as I'm not trying to write what they wrote. I don't think I really mind that it's all washing around in there, because you can't, like, if you even in the world a little bit, you can't help but being like permanently soaking up everybody's everything. And I think that's just my way, and I don't mind if like parts of my voice come from somewhere, because all of my voice surely comes from somewhere. As long as it feels like emotionally real to me, then that feels safe from like parroting things that you've taken in. And I just think maybe that's just my way. Maybe Jeffrey, I think, has a little bit of a different way.
Well, Jeffrey plagiarizes the Lord.
That's bold.
I can't really put it into, I can't explain it really. I just know that I feel when I am in that space that I want to be writing or really creative. I feel bad when I hear other things. I just feel bad in my body. Like I feel like it takes me away from that place. And it's not like there's any one way that's better than the other or anything. I've kind of learned, I think, a little over the years to respond to the things that pull me away from the place I want to be or push me towards it. And
so Jeffrey is recording right now. Are you recording for an album?
Yeah, I'm making an album right now.
Awesome. And Anna just put out a record last year, Outsiders.
Yeah.
What's it like to balance your projects? Do you try to avoid syncing up releases or anything like that?
No, I mean this is Anna puts out a lot more music than I do. So there's no balance to it at all. But no, we don't think about that at all. We just the whole strategic business side of this whole thing, which is important, but it's like the very, very last thought of all this for both of us, I think. And so we're just, you know, if we're able to write, we're writing. And when an album,
if we have an urge to record, we do it.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, we both feel really strongly about that, or, and it's nice to be in the world next to each other, because you get, there's a lot of noise that's not that, and just to like watch your person function on the level of like, oh, I gotta write right now, or this is the most important part. It's like constantly reminds you that, oh yeah, that is also what resonates with me deeply, and I don't need to think about the calendar or the content part of it. It won't make what I'm making better ever.
Hmm.
We do have good help though, like both of us, great help in the world of business and whatever, and like, so you know, if like Anne and I wanted
someone else
to,
pays attention to your calendar.
Yeah, like if we wanted to release albums on the same day, there would be a few people that would say, maybe we should not do that. And that's been good.
Then you can be like, but I feel it in my body.
That's pretty much how those conversations go. we have the same wonderful manager who, you know, Cindy, who is like such a friend, and so I think he is very good at.
He'd probably be like, I respect that.
It's like, your body knows what's best.
You assholes. your body knows what's best. Okay, so before we leave, we're going to do a lightning round. This is a very special lightning round. It's called Which One? So I'm going to ask you a question, and you're going to answer it in I'm going to go 1, 2, 3, and then you're going to say either Anna or Jeffrey.
Oh, Jesus, okay.
Does that better? Does that make sense?
Yeah, does that better? Okay, yeah.
Which one does it better? Okay. Which one is the better driver? 1, 2, 3.
Me.
Jeffrey. Except for I'm really good at parallel parking.
Wow. Right. With or without the backup camera?
Yes.
Yes. Great. Okay. Next one. Which one always eats their vegetables? 1, 2, 3.
Anna.
Me.
Damn it.
Okay. Which one has jokes? 1, 2, 3.
Wait, this is a tricky one. You should, if you phrase that question, which one thinks they have jokes? Then it would be Anna all day long.
I think you've got great jokes. Maybe your jokes are more thought through also. Your jokes are more funny, possibly. I hate to say it.
Okay, next one. Which one is more likely to run for office? 1, 2, 3.
Oh, no, fuck no.
I don't think that would be good for anybody. The public wouldn't appreciate that.
Yeah, even in this moment we're in, it would still be a terrible, terrible thing.
Okay, which one is always late? 1, 2, 3.
Me? Am I more late than you?
Maybe so. I guess we can think about who missed the first iteration of this podcast.
Yeah. Fair enough. Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah.
Dear listener. Yeah.
Back to my slow mind.
We were meant to record hours earlier. Anna was on the Zoom.
I missed that. Yeah.
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 Okay. Just a couple more. Which one is more sporty? 1, 2, 3.
Anna.
I move my body a lot, so my mind doesn't get sad, but Jeffrey's, like, stupidly good at all games.
Yeah, but just dumb games, like throw the cup into the other cup or some shit like that. Like, you know, you played soccer for a decade.
Throw the cup into the other cup. Okay, we'll do one more, okay?
Okay.
Which one is a better liar? 1, 2... 3.
Me.
Oh, yeah,
I think I'm
maybe
a better liar.
Yeah, you might be.
Yeah.
I want to be better.
Yeah, she...
I want to be a better liar. Oh, that's great. Wonderful. I'm glad to hear about it.
Yeah, those are great.
Well, that's it. Great. Thank you for playing Which One and being on Basic Folk.
Thanks for having us.
If you are listening in real time, it is my birthday, so you may wish me happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. I'm 40 wonderful years. 41.
Wonderful.
Right. Well, this is cool. Thank you so much, guys. I had a lot of fun.
Thank you.
We did too. Thanks, Cindy.
This episode of Basic Folk was produced by John Nungesser. We are on the Bluegrass Situation Podcast Network. You can find us there. You can search for us on the SiriusXM app under Basic Folk. You can go to our website, basicfolk.com, or find us wherever you get podcasts. Thanks for listening all the way to the end. If you enjoyed this podcast, please share it, rate, review, subscribe, all that, and we'll talk to you next time. Bye.